Anna, and I'm going to talk about a project that I'm working on with, or a presentation that I've worked on with two of my colleagues, Christian Mjorn and Julie Lowerson, who cannot be here today. But I'd like to kind of touch on an aspect of the project that looks into entry into custody. And studying the kind of pains of imprisonment has been a key concern of early prison sociology ever since Sykes' classic study. But rarely have the pains of entering prison been studied in particular, and even more rarely through a kind of comparative framework. So the lack of interest in the processes of entering prison is surprising, given that people like Goffman, for example, and others have looked into this status transition in the works of also what we heard about earlier from Jane. And we seek to fill this gap by exploring and comparing the experiences of entering custody in England and Wales and Norway. And a benefit of this research design is that it enables the study to look at different penal contexts that are shaped by pains of entry. It's a bit of a shame that we've lost the two Norwegian researchers in the room just now, but maybe they can comment on this presentation later down the line. So the overview of our talk is as follows. I'm just going to give you a very brief background on the entry-exit sub-study within the overall project, and then talk about very briefly what we know about entry, give you a short description of methods, and then talk mainly about our fieldwork findings from Norway and England and Wales. And I don't have the time to talk about the overall project very much, but if you're interested, there's quite a lot of information on our website and also our blog, which comes up later in the slides. So within the overall COMPEN research project, which is designed by Ben, who's talking later, the entry-exit sub-study is probably the most complex in terms of logistics and also probably the most time-consuming, as it spanned from the start of fieldwork last November to the end of fieldwork in 2019. And we've started research in 7 core prisons across the two countries and expanded to many more secondary prisons as prisoners move on and we try and find them again in the system. So this study very much focuses on different points within a person's contact with the criminal justice system and their movements around different carceral spaces, which very well fits into the current carceral geographic work on mobilities and social life whilst in prisons. So just to follow on to what we know about entry, many qualitative prison studies briefly touch on entry, but we haven't yet come across one that solely focuses on the impact of the admission process, and we find this quite surprising given the significance of this transition period. So there are many studies that just touch on it a little bit, like Schmidt and Jones study or Sexton study on penal consciousness, and also Ben's previous work. The entry process is very much covered by Goffman's asylums and also by Sykes' study in some ways. And we would say that they provide an important conceptual background for our thinking through of the geographies of the entry process, but they're by no means the only conceptual point, and Ben is talking later about our conceptual framework, which I don't want to touch on now. Just a short description of methods. The paper draws on data produced as part of this larger overall study that consists of more than 200 qualitative interviews with prisoners and also observations from different prisons in England, Wales and Norway. And for our entry, exit and post-release sub-study, we use in-depth qualitative interviews as well as participant observations. So for example, we spent quite a lot of time in reception just kind of standing there and taking in what happens when prisoners enter the prison. And also for the exit part, which doesn't really feature here, how prisoners exit the prison as well. And we try to interview the same people 3 times at different stages of their imprisonment, and that is basically just after they come in. So sometimes we give them a couple of days, sometimes we try and catch up with them in the reception and follow them up on the wing. And then again, when they exit, just before they exit and post-release in the community. So for our understanding of entry, we spend time in each prison's reception area, following people, stepping into kind of their world of how they experience coming onto the wing and going into their cell and so on. And we try to interview people to understand, I guess, on a kind of deeper level how entry works. But before delving into our findings from the field, I just want to briefly clarify what we understand entry to be. So We're asking prisoners about their experience of being in court, which obviously starts before they enter prison, the journey to the prison vans and so on, that the reception process, the first couple of hours they often spend in reception, having a pat down, getting kind of some property through, that kind of thing. But then also the kind of days that follow, the early days in custody, which are often the hardest. But we also found that it's not easy to define a start and end kind of point to entry. And Judith was talking about that earlier a little bit, about the journey and how that's kind of constructed as part of the punishment process. And I think this is kind of fits in on some level with what's been said earlier in the conference. So I'd now like to give you some more direct insights into our observations and findings of what interviews have said about the entry process. And I've divided it up a little bit into Norway first and then England and Wales to better understand how the pains of entry differ and mirror each other in some ways. So by observing entry processes and procedures in Norway and asking people in their first interview what it felt like coming in, we found that overall many people felt they were treated very dignified, respectful, and as individuals. And as my colleague Christian remarked in his field notes, he wrote, "Observe the whole procedure from where I'm sitting, where Morten, the prisoner, entered the room. Pesa, the prison guard, got up from his chair and walked around the desk to greet him by shaking his hand and presenting himself, saying, 'My name is Petter.'" And he continues saying, "They start with taking pictures, which is a bit demanding because the prisoner uses crutches. And Petter says, 'Thank you so much. You may now sit down and rest while I go through some questions.'" So this rather individualized entry process has at least three key features that I'd like to highlight. The first is that the entry process is individualized in the sense that the reception officer seems to accommodate the entry process to prisoners' perceived kind of individual needs. Another illustration here is an entry we observed in a high security prison in Norway where a young first-timer turned up at the gate, but he was clearly quite terrified of coming in. And one of the officers went out of the gate, greeted him and followed him in, or took him in, and talked him kind of through the process very slowly. The second feature of individualized entry is the fact that in most cases, prisoners enter the system on their own, not in a group. So there's no other incoming prisoners at the same time, which makes the actual registration process very different. It's one prisoner at a time in a designated room, in quite a, what we've heard from Christian, quite a calm environment. Even though this seems to be positive in most cases, it can also be possibly lead to feeling completely alone and kind of alienated. Espen, one of our interviewees, said, "I arrived in reception, went through all my things, made sure I didn't have anything illegal on me, showed me where my room was, and then they left." So that is not that different from what we might hear later from prisoners in England and Wales. So the third feature of individualization relates to the work that's being done ahead of entry. For example, the senior officer in reception typically performs an informal screening before people even come in. And most of the time they will have some contact with incoming prisoners ahead of coming in, even weeks and months before they enter the prison. So he says that he, that's the last one down there, he reads the verdict, sometimes he talks to them on the phone, sometimes they call with questions. They ask about postponing their sentence and other issues, and he asks them questions, reads their file, and kind of tries to understand what kind of person they are and how they might fit into the prison. So these observations show how the process of entry matters. I think in particular it highlights the geography of entry, so if you want to call it that, the importance of crossing boundaries. The sharing of space is quite prevalent in the feature from that Petter gave earlier, getting up to greet Morten, trying to make him comfortable by offering him to sit down, or meeting an anxious prisoner outside the gate and kind of helping him in, which makes the transition easier. So although the entry process has a kind of positive and individualized character in the examples that we're given, which seems in most cases to reduce the pains of entry, there are some problems still that are reported. So first, many sex offenders we interviewed reported that they felt discriminated against by reception staff. So these prisoners complained about unfriendly reception officers that did little to hide their contempt. And secondly, the standard procedure for incoming prisoners is in high security prisons is being placed on an induction wing in isolation in a kind of more restrictive regime. often leaving prisoners locked up for 23 hours a day, and they spend considerable time on those wings, often weeks and months, before being transferred to a different part of the prison. So the isolation and that many prisoners experience when entering custody is generally felt to be highly painful. And we argue that the pains experienced by newly incoming prisoners is very, in these restrictive regimes, is often is more important to them than the significance of the kind of respectful treatment that they might get from staff. Moving on to England and Wales, there's often many more people coming through the system, up to 40 a day in the larger inner city prisons, with up to 12 prisoners arriving in each van. Coming through the reception process, in that sense, is a lot more mechanized. So the reception areas holding interview rooms are often very sparsely decorated. The first site for incoming prisoners, they're often handcuffed, is a large metal detector. So that's a very different kind of environment to come into. There's a set process with fixed questions that the prison generally follows, and it's much harder to respond to individual need in that. So some questions from my field diary that I wrote down is, have you been in jail before? Do you speak English? Are you alcohol addicted, drug addicted, self-harm? Any other court cases pending? What's your family? Where's your address? And so on. So very quick kind of questions so that just tick boxes pretty much. So the manner how they ask people seems very procedural. And we've witnessed how officers and civilian staff often leave kind of doors open for health assessments and so on, or intake interviews, which makes it very difficult to ensure privacy. So some prisoners describe the alienating process of prison entry very well in their own words. Archie from Pentonville, for example, mentions that it's kind of sort of regimented, that there's no sensitivity for the fact that people must be feeling alienated and scared, and that you're treated as a prison number rather than as an individual. And Zachary describes how the officer was very blunt and how they just kind of portrayed that they wanted to go home rather than deal with him, and it was all very quick, so he says. Luca as well, that's not up on the slide, but he said they tried their best, you know, to metaphorically and physically strip away everything that you are as a human being. It's, you know, by taking all your possessions away and just throwing them in a bin in front of you. So it's not just about how they talk to you, it's also how they treat your possessions and I guess your body in that space. Interestingly, some prisoners who've been to prison many times don't seem to think that the entry process is as daunting. So we have a lot of examples for that as well, but they still describe it in a kind of mechanized and not very emotionally, mechanized way that's not as emotionally challenging as people that might come in for the first time. But here again, the individual spaces seem to make a lot of difference to the process, and the way bodies are processed through the reception procedure and personal space kind of matters less and is more mechanized and I guess makes for a more detached entry process. So rather than coming to a definite conclusion, we found that at this stage of our research we generated in some ways more questions than we've answered. But there are many different ways to conceptualize the pains of entry, and we can draw on how reception spaces look, how processes and prisoner groups are treated in different ways, and also our own observations. And each of those can contribute kind of valid points to our discussion. There's no one entry, and I think there's these different steps of the entry process, like reception, induction, coming onto the wing and settling in, kind of illustrate different pains in some ways. Actually, we found that it can be quite tricky to prompt prisoners to give details about the entry process because they seem much more occupied with getting onto the wing and where they're located and what that placement entails rather than describing in detail how they felt when they were searched and so on. So, yes, to come to a conclusion, an important kind of overall observation we found in the field is that in England and Wales we have more mechanized forms of entry, whereas in Norway it's a lot more individualized. And in conclusion, we propose that the comparative study of the pains of entry highlight important differences between the inclusionary and exclusionary penal regimes that have not yet been accounted for in a debate that's been going on for quite a while on the exceptional character of Nordic imprisonment. A more obvious aspect is the significance of size, so entry in England and Wales could be described as more machine-like by necessity, Equally, small numbers of entry in most Norwegian prisons make it possible to further individualise the process. This, however, is a necessary but not sufficient condition for this. And methodologically and conceptually, we've learned a lot by observing entry spaces and talking about it. So asking, does bad entry necessarily lead to worse outcomes or more pain, made us question how our own observations. So some people we've seen coming through the reception process and we thought were treated quite well, talked to us in an interview and said how they felt it was all very disrespectful and degrading, questioning how we kind of observe that space and how we make sense of that process. And thus the different conditions that we can observe ourselves do not necessarily correspond with prisoners' own experiences of their pains of entry. The unpredictability, uncertainty and confusion that we've heard about in lots of other presentations yesterday and today as well, all of these are significant feelings related to entry in both countries. In England, a lack of personal engagement for many, but not all prisoners, is experienced as a pain. Further, in the UK, entry into custody is very much occupied with risks. Risk of self-harm, risk of harming others, risk of escape, and risk of for security and so on. This is less the case in Norway. The occupation with risk in the UK contributes to a more mechanised experience of the overall process, whereas the information gathering, the contact between prisoner and prison ahead of entry in Norway, contributes to a more individualised experience. However, as soon as we widen the time frame for entry and consider the first couple of days, the picture changes a lot. As we heard, in Norway it can be a lot more punitive on an induction wing than, for example, in a prison in England and Wales. Mostly induction wings are mechanical in both countries, but the potential isolation heightens prisoners' pains of entry in Norway. Although we are clearly not the first to point out the pains imposed by pre-trial 23-hour isolation in Norway, and we think it's novel to point out how this isolation relates to pains of entry. And we argue that the contrast between pain-reducing reception processes and pain-imposing isolation practices make us question how we conceptualize it. So at the end, therefore, we'd like to emphasize that researching entry is important and is often has a much more long-lasting effect than lots of people and researchers think. And entry doesn't start and stop with reception. Many people have multiple entries during their prison journeys, as we've heard from Jane earlier, for example, from the young offender to the adult estate, between different prisons and so on. And in England and Wales, the entry really starts at court, whereas in Norway, it starts when people contact the prison or the prison contacts them to ask how and when they want to come in. So the entry process often spreads out over a couple of days, and settling in on a wing, learning about how the prison works and so on, is all part of that. So we want to end by complicating the picture and raising that the entry process is more messy than officials, officers, and many researchers tend to think, and that its effects last a lot longer as well. So thank you very much.